we go. You're ready for this, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show, the only show of its kind. I'm Gary Bell along with Brad Pollock. We are injury attorneys. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock, but this show is brought to you so you can call us and ask us questions on any legal subject, and we'll help you solve your problems on any legal subject, even though we're injury attorneys. Our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our shows are on our website. We do a variety of injury shows because we are injury attorneys. We do our shows throughout this the Denver metro area, in the mountains, towns, eastern plains, and we cover a large geographical area to give you information you need. We do a one-hour KOA, 8:50 a.m. every Saturday, 10 to 11 in the morning on 8:50 a.m. KOA, Champions of the People Injury Show. Today we're talking about trucking accidents and trucking federal motor carrier safety rules and regulations. When you're involved in an accident or a crash with a truck, it's a whole different ball game. It's a different animal. It's not just two cars, if there can be anything like, quote, just two cars. It's a whole different set of rules and regulations. There's thousands of them. There's thousands of interpretations, and you better know what they are. If you're interested, you can listen to our show today, the Champions of the People Injury Show, 10 to 11 o'clock, 8:50 a.m. KOA. You can call us right now, right here at 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. We'll be glad to answer your questions on any legal subject. All right, you know, we got an interesting case. What do you guys think about dog sniffers? They got these dogs that sniff for drugs. If you ever got out of the country, you come back into the country, customs have dogs. Dogs at the airport, they sniff for drugs. Police dogs. What's the law on dogs sniffing for drugs? Is it proper? Is it legal? And so we got an interesting new case in Colorado on dogs that sniff for drugs. And you know, everybody knows that the United States Constitution prohibits unreasonable, illegal searches and seizures. Everybody knows or should know that the Colorado Constitution provides the same thing. Brad, let's talk about this a little bit. But why don't you explain? Because it's important. Why don't you explain what's called the fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine? Sounds kind of weird. Fruit of the poisonous tree doctrine, because it's highly relevant.
Well, it is relevant, and it's a basic premise in our country. I think it's something that's discussed or that applies in just about every of jurisdiction throughout the country, and it's a classic doctrine. It pretty much is a legal metaphor in the United States. It's to describe evidence that is obtained illegally. And you can get a certain amount of evidence that's obtained illegally. Now, we all know if you obtain evidence illegally, usually you're not allowed to use it in court. That's the ultimate reason, the ultimate way that the courts assure that our police officers and our legal authorities are getting evidence correctly. They're making sure that they understand that, look, if you get this incorrectly, if you search without a warrant, if you search without probable cause, if you take certain actions you're not supposed to take, if you get this evidence inappropriately, you're not going to be able to use it in court. But it goes further, because they try to use the tree as the source, and they use the fruit from the tree they talk about the branches that extend out from the tree. And if you're able as a law enforcement officer to follow and get more evidence based on this illegally obtained evidence that you obtained, then what you're doing is you're putting yourself in a situation where all of that is going to be excluded. So it's not just the original information you get, it's the additional information that becomes inadmissible that you get as you're following the branches of the original poisonous evidence that you obtained, illegal evidence you obtained, and the exclusionary rule will make it so none of this evidence is available to do a prosecution. So it's very important that, and what defense attorneys will do quite often is they follow, how did you get this information? Let's take if you get information from somebody or in some way in an illegal wiretap, You did an illegal wiretap, and you got the information, and you shouldn't have gotten that information. And not only did you get information there that was a crime, but you also heard about additional places and additional things were going on that you were able to chase down and get evidence and get criminal evidence from the conversation that you listened to that you weren't supposed to be listening to. Now, not only is that conversation stricken or excluded, but also all the leads that you got and all the additional evidence you got as you chase down this poisonous tree is not available to you.
Right. So that in effect stops many prosecutions. Let's use another example. Suppose, and that's a great example, a wiretap example, illegal wiretap. You get information XYZ, and so that's legitimate information, but you obtained it illegally, so it's excluded. That's called the poisonous tree, and the fruit of the poisonous tree would be the great evidence the police had or got on your wiretap example from the wiretap. Let's use another example. Somebody is doing a search. They do an illegal search of a house, and they find cocaine. But the search was illegal. And so the fruit is the cocaine. And the poisonous tree, this is an incredible legal doctrine. Those are the words used in the law. The poisonous tree is the fact that you did an illegal search in the house. The fruit was the cocaine. So every defense lawyer in the world knows that if you can get rid of the evidence, there's no case. And it's probably going to be dismissed or dropped or whatever. And it's a big fight to suppress evidence, and you see it in the papers all the time. So in that case, there would be a big fight, a motion to suppress all the evidence about the cocaine because it was the fruit of a poisonous tree, meaning an illegal search and seizure, and you're off and running, you know. And so that's how the doctrine works. How does this apply to what we're going to talk to you about today? Well, dogs sniff for drugs, right? Under the United States Supreme Court, they've held that dog sniffing for drugs in general is not a search. Therefore, there doesn't have to be probable cause to begin with. And since it's not a search, you don't need probable cause. And since it's not a search, you don't need a warrant. You don't need anything. If it were a search, the United States Supreme Court has held, then you would need to meet the requirements. There's all kinds of requirements, Aguilar versus Spinelli, search warrants requirements, etc. But the United States Supreme Court has ruled that it's not a search. Now, comes along the case in Colorado called People versus McKnight. It's a fascinating case about dogs that sniff for drugs. And so we're going to be talking about that today. You can call us right now, 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. We got lines open. We'll be glad to talk to you about your subject, your problems. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack. Our law firm is Bell and Pollack, Champions of the People. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back. Fasten your seatbelt. Here we go. Gary Bell, Brad Pollack. Our law firm is Bell and Pollack. We are injury attorneys. We were talking about before the break, the doctrine of the fruit of the poisonous tree. That's actually a legal doctrine. It's actually in the law. And we explained in the cocaine example that would be the fruit because the police would want to use it to prosecute for possession of cocaine, etc. Maybe distribution, maybe with intent to distribute. That's the fruit. But the poisonous tree is the illegal search. And the United States Supreme Court has held that you cannot use the fruit of the poisonous tree when you obtain it illegally. Brad's example was great with a wiretap. You know, as injury attorneys, we deal with this. The fruit of the poisonous tree is a criminal doctrine, so we don't deal with that so much, but we deal with the same concepts. What if insurance companies get your records, your medical records, improperly? I mean, so that's not an illegal search and seizure because that only applies to state action, like police action, right? FBI action, United States Marshal action, that sort of thing. But it's still, there are laws about obtaining your medical records in injury cases improperly, and there's things that you can do about it, and you can request sanctions. And so it's a similar type concept in the civil world where you do injury questions. All right, join us live right now from Morrison is Don. Good morning, Don. What can we do for you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Good to talk to you once again, as always. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I wanted to inquire about the a factory warranty on a vehicle I have.
All right.
And the particular brand we'll leave out for the moment. The gloves are about to come off, but we'll be somewhat polite still and say that this major automobile manufacturer has voided my warranty. And they've given a reason. It took me 6 months to get the letter that they say it's been altered. And that's one word that's in the exclusions wording. So I want to know if it's an insurance product specifically, because if they're dealing with me in bad faith, treble damages might apply. So it's a service contract, and the general manager of the dealership where I bought it some years ago said that's an insurance company. It's separate. It has nothing to do with us. You're dealing with them. You bought it from them. I'm like, hold on. I paid you guys here when I bought the vehicle. It was part of the original contract to be upfitted with a utility box. I bought it that way. I didn't alter anything. So is the local dealership culpable? Because the folks are washing their hands of it back in Detroit. And is it an insurance product? How can I find that out?
Is this an extended warranty you're dealing with?
You might call it that. They call it a lifetime warranty, a certain service contract, service repair contract, maintenance contract. It's a bumper-to-bumper warranty on the vehicle, which they no longer sell because they were losing their ass on it. I've enjoyed them repairing it. They've done so for over 100,000 miles of usage. They fix it with zero deductible. It's been a really good purchase on my side. Not such a smart deal on their side, I suppose. I don't know. They could have sold millions of these for all I know. It was like $4,300 up front when I bought the vehicle, but it's on the original contract as part of the sale of the vehicle, equipped that way.
Man, you're cooking all points. You're firing all cylinders. You're using the right words. I'm impressed, Don. So you know you got the contract, you got the dealership, you got the original contract, you got the words exclusion. So, and Brad's got his own take on this also, but let's not forget the Magnuson Moss Warranty Act, because the Magnuson Moss Warranty Act does involve the dealer, it does involve the chain of distribution, and basically it has a provision that says a dealer, we're talking about dealer here, must prove that the alteration, the aftermarket equipment, et cetera, caused the need for repairs in that particular situation. So, they're not completely absolved. I think they're just trying to send you on a wild goose chase, on a hike, and goodbye. You know what I mean?
Yep, I do. But I did my little bit of reading on the Internet Federal Trade Commission, because if someone had suggested Magnuson Moss Act to me, and from what I could tell, you guys are who I called to look at it, is that they only applied to a 3-year first initial manufacturer's offered warranty with the vehicle as the standard offering. This is a piece of paper that is a separate. They're claiming it's a separate insurance product, and it's printed on a separate page, but most certainly billed for and paid for and referenced on the original paperwork. I have a decline to arbitrate signed by the management with me on the day of purchase, and I have written out notification day of sale that what they're to do, that they're to equip the truck with said utility vehicle. So it's all documented.
But the separate paper, you said earlier that it's referenced in the original basic contract document?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Your long legal form, that long thing, it's all right there as part of what I'm paying for, finance, the whole deal.
Right.
So they made no disclosure to you. How long did you buy the vehicle?
They did make disclosure in the fine print at the bottom. But you can't use it as a taxi, a limo, this, that, and the other. And one of the things they say, so far the only thing they point to, is you can't alter the vehicle.
Okay.
So I ask them, if I put a shell on my truck, does that alter it? And they say, oh, no. Well, then how in the hell is a utility box any different? Because it doesn't change the engine, didn't change it. I didn't put an air modifier of any kind. We didn't change from two-wheel to four-wheel, this kind of thing.
They're saying utility box constitutes a modification of the vehicle such that you lose your warranty?
And therefore an exclusion and you lose.
Yes. And also I checked with the modifier, the company that they used is a local company, well-known in the industry, called Mastercraft, and they've told me we absolutely upfitted it to the manufacturer's specifications of what they would do had they done it themselves. It's called a group service contract application is what the original separate paperwork showed. And by MaxiCare. It was 999,999 miles, a million miles coverage.
What's the first word you said? Something group service? What?
Pricer.
Pricer?
Yep.
Okay. At any time, did they tell you what modifications would constitute or would void the warranty?
Absolutely not. There's only one little wording in the small part of the they say report. The following vehicles are not eligible for group service contract. And they're, see, they're calling it a service contract, and the manager called it an insurance product. So I wanted to know maybe if he's got that wrong.
Well, he may have, but it's almost tantamount to me because I've done these cases before. Like on a cruise ship, and people sign up for a side excursion trip, like a helicopter ride, and they get killed, and the cruise ship says we're not responsible. It's almost the same concept, but I'm still back on the Magnuson-Morrison Warranty Act, but we'll talk about that in a minute. I mean, I think we would like to help you. We'd like to see the paperwork. You can't, if you call it a service contract, it doesn't matter. You say it's built into the basic contract. You paid for it. They said it. There's no modification or alteration, and even if there were, I think it would have to be material and significant to the transaction, right?
I would think so.
Yeah, absolutely.
Specifically why this is an issue for them about this utility box, because I could carry bricks all around for 7 years in the back of my truck. As long as I don't exceed payload in the box they gave me, I just changed the box. My box has more doors on it. Theirs had a door on it. It's a tailgate.
Right, right.
I thought this through pretty well, and I want to share with you that over 100,000 miles, there was transmission problems before and after, and they are. I could take it to any dealership, so I did, of the makers.
Well, I was going to ask you, have you had that utility box on your truck before and actually had them honor the warranty?
Yes, it's just getting to that. It's been on there the entire time. It sits that way equipped today, and they've rebuilt the transmission twice. And now this third time when they had to be replaced because something broke, they declined to honor the warranty. And they're saying, well, we didn't know you had a utility box on there. We never inspected it. So now that we do know that, we're done with you.
No, they're looking for an excuse to get rid of it.
Absolutely.
That's all they're doing.
You know it. We know it. Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. It really sounds like you've done your homework.
What I'm worried about, Don, is if there's an arbitration clause in there and if it's mandatory or not.
Nope. I have paper signed on the day of sale where I declined to accept the arbitration offer.
Okay.
By the manager. So it's a court issue. What I want to know is where do I go to compel these guys to act? Because all they can do is tell me, Don, we're not doing nothing for you. This is a Chrysler contract. It has nothing to do with the local dealer. I'm like, bull crap, guys. Sorry, there I go again. I get worked up. That it has everything to do with you because I wrote the check here. You cashed it. You made the commissionable money on it, and you're their agent. You're their representative.
They made the sale to you right there.
Yep.
And I'll bet you anything that when we delve into it, we're going to find out they got a percentage of that money that you paid and for selling it. They got either a kickback or else they took it right off the top before they went through.
Well, they didn't do it for nothing. They did it for something, and I'm sure Brad's right, and you're right.
But the question I've got is they're declining the warranty, and they keep saying it's an insurance product, and I'd like to find the company that's behind the warranty. So I would like to see your paperwork. And
sure, I'll get it to you.
Okay.
Yeah, I would only have bought a manufacturer's warranty as a consumer. You know, you listen to certain radio shows, and they tell you that kind of stuff over the years, right?
Right.
So that's
right.
What I did.
Exactly.
And they've been performing on the contract. They've been paying. It's zero deductible. It's been a good, intelligent decision, and it was material why I bought that brand of truck, because they offered this kind of warranty from the factory.
We'd like to help you because it's just some of the same things as a warranty. Forget the box. Forget the utility box. Forget that a second. You go in the same thing with the transmission. You talked about that. You go in the same thing with something else that fails, and you buy the warranty.
Yeah. I'm pretty clear that if the box had an issue, I don't go to them. They didn't sell the box. And I'm not talking at all about what was added by them to the truck, only the basics of the vehicle that I bought that did come out of the factory.
Well, we got to go, and we'll get your number so we can talk to you. What's wrong with the truck now?
Oh, a piece of heat shield still off the vehicle that covers the gas tank right now.
Okay.
All right, now give Kevin your information, and we'll give you a call, and we'll see if we can help you. And we very much appreciate your call. Wow, what a great call.
Thank you. Take care.
All right. You're welcome. You hold on. Listen to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we are injury attorneys. We do injury cases all over the state of Colorado. We have for years. You can put our experience to work for you. You can call us at our law firm anytime, or you can go to our website, championsofthepeople.com. If you've been injured on the job, we can help you and work with you. We've done cases, we've done jury trials in all four corners of the state and in between. If you've been injured by a truck or on a bicycle or pedestrian accident, we can help you. Champions of the People. We'll be right back. All right, here we go. Welcome back. Fasten your seatbelt. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock. Our law firm is Bell and Pollock. Injury attorneys bringing you the show every week to help you on every legal subject. And we've been doing it for years, and we're glad to do it. You can call us right now. Right now, 303-713-8255. That's 303-713-8255. We'll handle your problems, your questions, and if we can't do it on the air, we'll do it off the air, and if it's outside of our expertise, we'll refer you to somebody else, an expert in the area, for free. We don't charge for that. We don't get paid for that. It's all free for you. Join us live from Caitlin's Restaurant, Azari. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing today?
Good. What's cooking over there?
We got all kinds of things going on. We are on the last week of these specials, so I'll start with that breakfast special. We're doing that Eggs Benedict on that flaky phyllo dough that I talked about. We're going to put prosciutto on there, sautéed spinach and mushrooms. We're going to top that with hollandaise. Of course, you can get a side of hash browns with that if that's not enough. That's one more week on the breakfast special. And then we've actually got two lunch specials. The last week for this one is the spicy pork quesadilla that we're doing with the cheddar and jack cheese. We're going to grill some pineapple, put the spicy pork on there, garnish that up with lettuce, tomato, guacamole, sour cream. That runs for one more week. And then we're going to start another lunch special with turkey. Since Thanksgiving is right around the corner, we're doing a turkey sandwich. We're doing deli turkey with thin sliced apples, red onion, brie cheese. We're going to put lettuce on that on a potato bun. Of course, you can get our waffle fries or our homemade potato chips on the side with that. Or you can get potato salad. We started making that. That's all made scratch. Come down and check that out. We're going to run that lunch special for 2 weeks. And, guys, every week, as always, from Monday through Friday, from 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., we do the two-egg, ham, bacon, and sausage special. That's the early bird special. You can get toast, tortilla, or pancakes with that. I always talk about the buttermilk pancakes, but any of those choices will do. Come on down and check those things out. Tons of other scratch-made products on the menu. Flat screens are on. I think the umbrellas will be out shortly. The deck is ready to go. Tons of things to check out today.
I think they got to get out there, Eric, a little early because there's supposed to be kind of rain and snow in late afternoon.
Yeah, and we are 6 a.m. to 2 p.m., so if you can get here early, you can get a chance to get out there and get early. Bring your dog down, get some of that warm weather to start off the day before it does turn. You know, it is Colorado. It does turn on a dime, so, yeah, absolutely.
Sure, and then they can get some of those pumpkin-shaped and decorated pancakes, right?
We do, absolutely. We have the pumpkin spice pancakes, and we are working on that Santa Claus pancake for you. We've actually been working on a peppermint pancake, so you have to come and check that out. We'll talk about that more next week or so. We're working on a recipe for that, so definitely come on down and check us out, guys.
My daughter loves your chocolate chip pancakes. That's we have to go there about at least once a month to get chocolate chip pancakes just for
absolutely.
Her.
Absolutely. You know, we do the peanut butter chocolate chip. We do the bananas Foster's. We do raspberry, blueberry, banana, all kinds. We do cheesecake pancakes. We've talked about that before. All kinds of varieties on those things. And those are all scratch made. They're all buttermilk pancakes, and they are scratch made. So
I was walking in the studio this morning, and I got past the second security door with my passion. They've got a beautiful, beautiful big screen TV with the weather day by day, and they have a picture of what it's going to be like, a picture of the sun. And today looked just dismal.
Oh,
so it'd be a great day to come to Caitlin's, right?
Absolutely. And you can come and get our chili bowl. You can get our red chili. You can get our green chili. There is no pork in the green chili. That is scratch made. A lot of people ask about that. Pork is traditional in the green. We don't have that, so that appeases a lot of people. So tons of things to check out and come and see. And good day to come to Caitlin's.
All right, Eric.
Okay, Eric. I don't want people thinking the wrong thing, because every time you get on and talk about specials and includes eggs and all that good stuff, I always go back to pancakes. So,
right.
You know, I do have to say, you know, to me, the best eggplant you've got out there is the Southern. And if anybody hasn't had it, you hold it in mystery and you tell us what a Southern is next week. And anybody who is wondering what a Southern is, go down and get a Southern bowl at Caitlin's. You're going to love it.
Where are you located?
Absolutely, guys. That's going to be at 4379 East Mississippi Avenue. Now, that is one block east of Colorado Boulevard. That is in the new and beautiful Glendale Center. Guys, come on down and check us out. You will love it, everybody, by the way.
All right, Eric, thanks a lot.
Guys, thank you so much.
All right, Bell and Pollock, we are injury attorneys, but we're here for you. You can call us right now at 303-713-8255. In the first part of the show, we taught you what the doctrine of fruit of the poisonous tree is and what it means, and we got some new cases. And the United States Supreme Court case and a new Colorado Supreme Court case on dogs that sniff for drugs. If we can get to it this hour, we will. It's a very fascinating case and very fascinating law. Right now, we're going to talk to Dan from Denver. Good morning, Dan.
This is Sam. Hi, guys.
Good. What's going on?
Landlord question.
Rock and roll. Here we go.
If someone is to bring a pet into the picture and say they've got themselves a what do they call that? Not special needs dog. Adaptive dog. What's the term? Sorry.
Service dog.
Service dog. Yeah. So they got an automatic in with that animal as a tenant, I suspect. That's what I've heard. Question is, if you have your tenants on it and you didn't like the dog or you didn't like how this came together and don't believe them that that's really the situation, you just want to skirt the $500 deposit that you would ask for. They're on a month-to-month. Can you have any and all reasons that you want to choose to not renew the lease?
You certainly could have. All right. Now, are you the landlord here?
Yes.
Okay. What does your lease say about animals? And let's figure out, did this person at the beginning of the commencement of the lease have the service dog with them, or
no.
Did it come up and crop up later?
Later.
All right, what is your lease?
This is not the issue. I'm just wondering if it were, because they once upon a time asked me if they could have a pet, and I said, there's no pets on the lease, as you saw, the lease you signed.
But wait a minute, and Brad wants his input, but does the lease say you cannot have pets, or is it just silent?
I have to go back and check. I think it says no pets, because if you have pets, you'd be required to pay a non-refundable deposit fee for that. And that we did not list those dogs on the lease as being residents. So I'd have to go back and check.
Okay.
To exclude this specifically. That's why I called to ask that question of you. So now I know. Go back and read it.
Yeah, we've got to know the lease. But, basically the problem you run into, and I don't know if it's a problem, but the situation you run into, is that a service dog isn't considered to be a pet. A service dog is considered to be a medical tool. And as far as landlords and how far they can explore the situation, what I think a landlord can definitely do to begin with is to find out if the service animal is prescribed by the medical professional. And you can require that they provide that information to you.
Let's say they give you papers, because that's right. If you want it, they have to produce it.
All right. Well, in the beginning analysis of this, the Colorado Fair Housing Act applies, and it protects it protects a certain class of people, and it says you can't discriminate against anyone with a disability, and it gives those with a service dog or an emotional support animal access to housing. So you've got a discrimination question on the Colorado Fair Housing Act to begin with. All right, so you can't discriminate. Then you get to step two, which Brad was talking about, the certification. And you just said earlier you don't really believe, or you might have grounds to not to believe it's even legitimate.
Right.
I guess it boils down to that. I get that they are eligible to bring the animal in. They would have to provide the paperwork to prove it once asked for it. And my question then is, can the landlord decide that he has all his rights as a landlord and deciding not to renew the lease 1 month later, 2 months later, whatever, because it's an ongoing month-to-month lease?
Okay, here.
Not specify that.
Right.
Here's my thing on that. I would find it hard to believe, I'd probably need to do a little more research on it, that you can necessarily just go and say, I'm not renewing your lease because you have a service dog. But here's the bottom line. A month-to-month lease, or any lease, that where the term expires, the landlord's not required to re-up the lease. Now, obviously, I'd have to see your lease to see if there's anything in it where a tenant can give a notice to renew and can bind you to the notice to renew, because they give it to you in a certain length of time, then you're bound. But if it's most of the leases I see and that I've dealt with in my career, where when the lease runs up, the lease runs up. I mean, bottom line, the lease is over. The landlord can say, okay, you're out, and they can do it for any reason they want.
Yeah. You want to sell the property, you know, you just say, there it is. We're going to put it on the market, and you got to clear out. We're going to clean it up, fix it up, and bye.
Well, you don't have to give an excuse at all. You can just say the lease is up, the contract's over, your time is done, and goodbye.
Yeah, I agree with Brad, but you're not dealing, you know, how attorneys talk, how attorneys think, how if you were sitting in front of an attorney at their desk and they were a good attorney, I think you would be advised that this is not a risk-free proposition. I agree with Brad. If the lease is over with, then it's over with. Okay? Yeah, a lease is a lease, and that's what leases are for. And you don't renew, and you make them leave, and then there's a risk, in my view, that they say that you violated the Fair Housing Act, but I think you've got the better part of the situation because the lease terminated. It ended.
Well, plus, Dan, I would never be looking saying, I'm not renewing your lease because you have a service dog. If you don't want to, especially when you have additional reasons in your own mind, you're saying, I think this tenant might even be lying to me about it being a true service dog. But the bottom line is that they have people with service dogs have certain rights. Remember, it's a medical tool; it's not a pet, and so you have a lot of questions there. But the other part of it is that because they have this medical tool that's a service dog, that does not mean that they automatically can require that the landlord continually renew their lease. The landlord can look and say, "Look, I want to stop this lease and get new tenants." And you don't look at it and say, well, it's because you're a service dog or you're not a service dog, because you can't do it based on that. But you can do it based on the fact of the contract has expired. When the contract expires, it's like the lease on my car. When the lease on my car expires, the manufacturers or the company is entitled to get their car back. I mean, you know,
but wait a minute. What if your dog likes riding in that car that you've leased? Don't you have a right to keep in the car and pay monthly?
No, Dan.
Dan.
I'm just kidding.
Can't do that. They can have my dog with the car if they want.
Hey, Dan, can you hang with us just over the break? I've got a couple more things to say to you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, hang on. So you're listening to the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Gary Bell, Brad Pollock, we are injury attorneys. We do cases all over the state of Colorado, and we have for years. You can put our experience to work for you. We have a lot of experience. We have jury trials. We've done many, many, many trials. We've had many injury cases. It doesn't matter if it's workers' comp or accidents. We can help you. And you can get any of our free books on injury subjects at our website, championsofthepeople.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back, Bell and Pollock. The Bell and Pollock Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. Right before the break, we were talking to Dan. Dan, you still with us?
I am here.
Okay, we wanted to kind of wrap it up with you, but do you want us to do anything? You want us to look at the lease, or do you feel okay that we've helped you, or do you need anything else from us?
I think we're good on that. Yeah.
Okay. All right. If your lease is coming to an end, it's coming to an end. Brad and I were talking during the break, and thanks for holding, is that, God bless these people that have service dogs. But if you're questioning, if it's not, if it's fraudulent, that's one thing. If it's legitimate, it's another thing, and they need them. But also, you have leases. I think the fair laws on the discrimination in Colorado for the Fair Housing Act deals with you can't discriminate. And I think the intent, I was looking at the statute, goes to the lease to begin with. It doesn't really address, what the lease happens when it ends. And when it ends, right?
So let me ask the final question of that. If the duration was the usual, let's say, one-year lease,
right,
and someone went in with them, brought their dog after the fact there, would the landlord be sort of stuck until the end of the lease typically?
Yes. I believe the.
Well, I think so.
Because you can't discriminate, and you know what everybody has to remember. You know, they call them ESA letters, emotional support letters. You cannot emotional support animal letters. You get them from a licensed professional that says this is that the people are in need of an ESA dog, and then you can say, okay, is this an ESA animal? But the bottom line is you can't discriminate when people need to use that because it's not a pet. It's a medical tool. And that's what you keep having to go back to. That's how the law looks at it, is not a pet, is a medical tool. But the other side of it is that people need to produce those letters from the medical profession.
You got to prove it. You can't just say it. You got to prove it.
And then finally, you know, like everybody else, whether you need an emotional support animal, whether you don't, whatever it is, you're subject to contracts. And if a contract expires, it expires. Now, I think you would be in a lot of trouble if you looked and said, I'm not going to lease to you anymore because you're using an emotional support animal.
I also think you'd be in a lot of trouble that during the pendency of the example, the one-year lease, during the pendency, they got an animal legitimately, and you said, well, because you've got this, I'm going to end this, then you're ending the contract and you're violating it, and I think that would be in trouble also, right?
Right. But so if a person has an emotional support dog on the airplane, you can be sure they had papers to get that on the airplane, right?
Sure.
Well, I feel comfortable. That's true.
I don't think they're just letting you come wandering in with any dog you want.
No, exactly.
And just say this is an emotional support dog. That and the people who abuse that, you know, the reverse of God bless them, whatever that would be.
Right.
Because they're taking advantage and they're taking a terrible advantage of the fact that people need emotional support animals, and if they have them, normally those animals are well trained. They're fantastic animals. And they don't cause any problem. They do a great service. But, you know, and landlords have to be careful on how they approach this because you have to understand that the bottom line is that this is not a problem with the animal. It's a problem with proper certification and whether or not your tenant is lying to you.
When needed, when legitimate, there's nothing more comforting than a dog, period.
I 100% agree.
Yeah. Well, so, hey, Dan, thanks for the call, man.
So one more thing, Dan. Yeah. I'll mention it to the guys coming up here next, Larry and Barry, and see if they want to comment on it or if they want to wait until next week or whatever. But listen to the beginning of the show at least, and we'll see if they want to talk about it too. Okay?
That's great. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate your call. All right, the Bell and Pollock Legal Show. You can call us at 303-713-8255. You know, we had a caller at the beginning of the show talking about this car warranty thing, and was it a service contract, an insurance contract, part of the purchase contract? And he mentioned treble damages. And when you have an insurance contract, like on your house or like your car, like you, uninsured motorist coverage or underinsured motorist coverage, and he mentioned treble damages and attorney's fees. That's part of the process. Well, that's the kind of cases that Bell and Pollock do. We can handle bad faith cases. We can handle bad faith insurance contract cases, dealing with the injuries that you've received, and it's a complicated area, and you can give us a call for a free consultation any time you like. Right now we're going to talk to Eva from Fort Collins. Good morning, Eva.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Okay. Hey, just a note. I find dogs a lot more nicer than most people.
Rock and roll. When you're a dog lover, you're just a dog lover, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Well, I have the best dog in the world, and that's why I love them all now, because he's the best, very best dog. Anyway, that's not why I called. I caught something on the news last night that was very confusing to me. It was they showed a picture of Fort Collins Police Station, and some person was in trouble for, I believe he harmed someone. And I don't know if he killed someone or how he harmed someone. I kind of missed that part.
Right.
But what I recalled that they said after his probation, he just got probation, and after his probation that he would not have a record. Now, my grandson was on probation, finished everything, completed it, and he paid to have his record expunged, and then he got a letter saying that there's a new law or ordinance that prohibits the expungement of a record, and I'm not sure why. Do you know anything about the case that they had on the news last night? Or I'm concerned about how does, can a person not expunge his record after probation?
Okay, so what was you don't know the crime of the news story you heard last night, right?
There was violence involved. I remember that because with my grandson, there was nothing like that. And I don't know if someone got killed or if they got injured, but it was a violent act, and they were on probation for it, which to me was amazing in and of itself.
Well, that and you just hit the big part of that that we'd have to find out. And, you know, we're up against time, but I'd like to get your name and number, and we can call you and talk to you about what your grandson might be able to do. But normally, they're not going to be able to expunge that record nor seal it. If probation may indicate that there was some kind of deferred judgment or deferred prosecution.
We're gonna give you a call. I'm gonna put you on hold. I'm so sorry. We'd love to talk to you more, but we'll talk to you off the air because we gotta go.
Okay.
We appreciate your call. Kevin will give us your information. The Bell and Pollock Legal Show. Don't forget about the show that follows ours, Barry and Larry, the Consumer Real Estate Show. Don't forget our website, championsofthepeople.com. All of our information is there. We're there for you, Bell and Pollock, because we are your champions of the people.